This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 373 for Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this week is Lou Page. You can find him at Busy Zombie Lord on all the social media that matters. And of course, one half of the Zombies Ate My podcast. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, as always, it's a pleasure to have you around. And I think we now... rather than joking about how long it's been or the weather, we can now move on to the third Lou meme, which is, how is Violet doing?
Violet is, doing good. We're having a rough night every here and there, but we're getting better sleep than we were a few weeks ago.
That's good. Does it leave you, like, are you able to consume media as you normally have, or do you find that you're just all over the map?
We consume pretty much the stuff we normally would. I mean, the baby's so small, she can't really pay attention to what's on the TV. So that's okay. And then we put her to bed about 6 or 7 o'clock at night. So once we put her to bed, it's like, okay, we can watch whatever we want and we don't have to worry about her watching. She's already watched several horror movies with me. So, I mean, and Eric is like, what are you watching? And I'm like, oh, it's just people getting murdered and slashed to death. And she's like, you know, you're not going to be able to do this in like 6 months. And I'm like, yes, I am. Come on.
Just face the baby the other way, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. That or Violet will grow up to be that one kid on the playground that is not scared of zombies, monsters, werewolves, you know, Dracula, the boogeyman, aliens. Like, she'll just be like, kids will be freaking out about some monster thing, and she'd just be like, you guys are wusses. You haven't seen anything.
that was me as a child. Yeah. That was me as a child. So yeah. My mother left me in a high chair watching Michael Jackson's Thriller. So
you turned out fine.
Exactly.
See aforementioned podcast, Zombies Ate My Podcast. Right? The reason why I brought that up is because when your co-host Ryan, and our obviously friend of the show, was on the Citadel Cafe last, he was talking about their new edition. Is it mm-hmm. Isabella, I think, or Isabel?
Isabel.
They were doing the same thing. You know, once the kid goes to bed at night, then Ryan and Ashley could watch like whatever it was they were watching on Amazon Prime or whatever. And they were saying that there's just so much to get through in terms of the stuff they were actually interested in watching. But then they only have this one window in the evening to sit down and actually watch some stuff. I've been having the choice paralysis lately, where I sit down to try and want to watch things that I've been starting but haven't stopped or haven't finished them on account of just not being in the mood for yet another dark show, or like they've somehow lost my interest. And so I've been struggling to find something. I have something new this week. It won't be new to you, but it's maybe new for me to talk about. But I had to power through some stuff.
I will say, I've had some of the similar things, especially when we first came home with Violet. It's been such an emotional up and down. Mm. We weren't watching anything with a dark plot. Like, intentionally, we'd come across a show and be like, oh, that looks really cool. We'll watch this in like 6 months when we're in the mood for it.
Yeah. I feel like, too, not to dwell on any kind of like world events or bring anybody down, but I feel like there's enough stuff happening in the news. I don't need shows that highlight the underbelly of human nature. You know, like on any other year, I would probably be all in on The Boys on Netflix. Like it's an interesting concept. It's not always my bag, but I would say that that'd be something that I would watch, because I thought the production value was good and I enjoyed the few episodes I did watch. But as 2020 marched on, I was just like, I don't want this. Like, this is not escapism for me. This is really parallel. This is like kind of scarily parallel to a lot of things. And so I've been trying to dive into a lot of animation over the last little while. So teaser for what's coming on later in the show. But as far as what I've been up to, actually, I have tried something new. Surprisingly, it took me 3.5 or 4 years of playing Minecraft to try modded Minecraft for the very first time. And I will point people towards a couple of VODs on my Twitch channel if you want to check out my very first experience with a mod pack called Olive Fabric 3. And I did not really do a lot of research other than this seemed to be a really good, well-reviewed mod pack for the Fabric Loader, which is just a way to load these mods into Minecraft. I've never played modded Minecraft. I've watched some, so I have an idea of how what the kind of things that you can end up doing in the game that you can't do in the vanilla version. So there's like, you know, new game mechanics to explore. I do like learning how things work. So things like, you know, taking something like iron ore and smelting it into iron ingots, that's been in the game for ages. That's part of the core of the Minecraft gameplay. But when you get into these tech mods and some other progression stuff, you can then like refine the iron ingots, you can smelt, there's all these different minerals. So then you've got, you know, tin and aluminum and copper and all these things that are not in Minecraft, and you can combine them, and it opens up a very robust tech tree. And so it's overwhelming at first, but you just kind of have to break it down into like, okay, what do I need to get started, you know, and how do I need to progress? And so I found it difficult, and I was kind of kicking myself because I ended up going to the wiki, which I try to avoid to do if I can. I'd like video games to try and guide me in the game rather than just me playing the game with a website open telling me how to do it. And I missed it. I did end up reading on the wiki that you have to put the iron ingot back in the furnace to turn it into a refined iron ingot. I was thinking I had to then move it to a new block that didn't exist. Like I had to move it onto a super furnace or a tech furnace or something to do its thing. And I just thought new block equals I pro or new item probably equals new block that I needed. And I never thought to try to put the darn thing back into the regular Minecraft furnace because you can't do that in the game. Like you can't re-smelt anything in the vanilla game. So really a lot of it is kind of unlearning what I've learned over the last 3 years in Minecraft and realizing, no.
Modding is a lot of that.
Yeah, so try like it's basically like forget everything that you know and just try everything all over again. So when you're first playing Minecraft and if you don't have any instructions, Minecraft does do some decent stuff where like, oh, you've picked up a piece of wood. Here are all the different things that you can make with that. They let you know that, hey, you've unlocked new recipes. Go look at those. And so this game, the mod pack does that too, but it doesn't do it. It does it for crafting, but it doesn't do it for smelting. So smelting is this kind of mystery. But in Minecraft, what you end up doing is you have to like test things out. Like, okay, can I burn? How do I use a furnace? Well, I can put logs and wood to fuel the furnace, and that will melt things, and I can move on from there. But then, like, you can discover through just trial and error that you can actually make charcoal. So if you can't dig coal out of the ground right away, you can turn logs into charcoal and make things that way. And so that's what I was using that Minecraft knowledge in modded Minecraft to try to make my heavy smelting start a little bit faster. And so it was kind of cool to like dig into my vanilla knowledge and kind of utilize that to start the game differently. Because one of the things that I've been doing for the last few years, and I won't spend too long on this, but I've been playing essentially endgame on the Citadel for like 2.5, 3 years. So I've not had to restart Minecraft very much at all. And so doing this with modded, you have to restart. You have to start a new world and a new game. And I thought, you know, let's try to do this as different as I can. Like, let's not just do the whole grind to get diamonds and dig a mine and just spend the first 3 hours digging up stuff. Let's just try to find like a purpose and stuff. And I really enjoyed the fact that this mod pack has got a bunch of different biomes. So what I like about it is basically it takes all the things that you're usually seeing when you walk around in a vanilla Minecraft world and just adding probably dozens of different biomes, and they don't feel alien. Like they feel pretty much like they should be part of the game. It's like taking like in Minecraft you have forest, desert, and like say plains, but in this pack you'll have like deserty plains or arid forest or like there's biomes in between, and there's just so much. Like we were joking on stream about how many rabbit holes you go off looking for sap from a tree, and then you're distracted by, oh man, this is like, there's like three different kinds of flowers that are in this area, plus everything is pretty, and ooh, what's that around the corner? And like, next thing you know, you're playing for 45 minutes. And so it was really fun to kind of have a game that I've been playing for years that I spend a lot of time talking about on the SpongeChunks podcast that I do every week, to go in with like fresh eyes and see all this new stuff. It was really, really, really enjoyable. I'm having some tech issues with Minecraft. It's mostly my computer. I'm having some frame stutter problems, which is causing me some headaches, quite literally. And so it's hard to play for a long time. But yeah. If people want to check them out, there's VODs on the Twitch channel, which is just twitch.tv/JoelDuggan. And this week on the SpongeChunks, on episode 105, we spent the main discussion talking about my first foray into modded. So we'll get into the you know, if you want the nitty gritty of the conversation, you can go over and listen to the SpongeChunks, because I know that not all of our audience here on this little cafe are Minecraft players. But I'm curious though, because I know that you do a lot of indie game stuff. Have you played many modded games?
Yeah, I did a lot with modded stuff when I was in high school, because I had lots of free time. So, you know, Half-Life had two dozen mods for it. I mean, that's what Counter-Strike was born from. And there was a bunch of other games like that that were born from being mods of Half-Life. And so I spent a lot of time playing games like that, which changed the game completely. It was its own game completely with the same engine, basically. And nowadays, I just don't have the time to mod stuff. It's not as easy as it used to be. And the only few games I do play with mods are, I play Darkest Dungeon with mods. Steam has made it really easy for people to make their own classes and add them to the game. So I'll browse the Steam library for a couple of new classes and throw that in the game just to add some variety. Because some of those starting classes in that game are really slow and boring. So it needs a little bit of a change. Like, there's an archer class that didn't come with the game, and the whoever did it, the art style and the way the class plays, you wouldn't know it didn't belong in the game. Nice. It literally looks like it just came out. Like, it looks like it could have been an expansion.
It's funny, like, that's the best kind of mods are the ones where the mod developer is so familiar with the core game that they're adding something that is more than likely just a quality of life improvement, but it feels very much in the spirit of the original game. Like, one of the things that I learned how to do just yesterday, actually, was turning cobblestone, which you mine up, like, essentially it's one of the first things you get in Minecraft, turning that into gravel. And so to get gravel in the game, you have to use a shovel, you have to find gravel deposits. It's not everywhere, but stone and cobblestone is everywhere. And if you need gravel to make things like, in this mod pack, it's asphalt, which is what I'm building my house out of. But you can also use gravel to make concrete and other things in Minecraft. And so you can't generate cobble. You can generate cobble. You cannot generate gravel. You have to go collect it. But this machine that I made grinds down cobblestone into gravel. And it makes sense. And what was neat about it is that, yes, it's a quality of life thing. Yes, it makes sense for Minecraft to do it. Now, the block that you used to use it is called a grinder, and it looks very futuristic. So, I mean, technically, there could have been a more vanilla art style to it, but functionally, it works just as you would expect. But the thing that I liked about it is that it was gated. It was gated behind a couple of different things. Like, in order to use the grinder, I had to figure out how to make a generator to power the grinder. And to make the generator, I had to learn how to tap rubber trees to get sap in order to make the insulated wire for the batteries. Like, it was just, it opened up, like, I kid you not, probably 90 minutes to 2 hours of gameplay just to get to grinding cobblestone into gravel. But it was worth it to me, because one of the things as an experienced Minecraft player that's a pain in the butt is when you want to build something, but you're then having to wait to go collect it. And if you've done that for 3 years, then you're just like, I'm done with this. Like, I know how to do this. It's not the most interesting or fun part of the game. The fun part of the game is creating things and making things automatic for me. And so when you can take something as vanilla as turning cobblestone into gravel, and automate that. And it's not fully automated. I still have to get the cobblestone. Like I have to get that. But I'm going to be getting that pretty much on my own anyway, because whenever you do a mine or dig something, you're going to end up with cobblestone. And
right.
And so it just makes that, you know, that process of getting new materials more interesting, and akin to your archer that, you know, you add to a Darkest Dungeon. Like it's just the mod. You know, developers are like, there's a couple of classes in this game that are really slow and boring. Like, let's try to do something that's more interesting, but also not a make win button. You know, like people want to play the game,
right?
They want to experience the game, but that's really cool.
There is a mod coming out. There is a mod for Stardew Valley that I've wanted to play, but I'm waiting until the newest patch for Stardew happens. There's a update to that game coming in the next month or so.
It's really
it adds like another change of life. It's going to add more stuff. It's going to add a whole bunch of other end game stuff. They've been teasing at it for a couple of months now, but there's a mod that somebody's made that not only does it, you have to start a new game when you use the mod because it won't fit into an existing game, but it adds 25 more townspeople, like three or four more romantic interests for your character. It adads like a half a dozen new things you can plant and grow, and a whole bunch of other extra things that didn't exist in the original game. And all of them have like their own plot lines and their own story and their own everything. And I'm like, I really want to play this mod, but I'm going to wait until I've finished with the next update, and then I'll venture into that path.
Nice. Yeah. I've owned Stardew Valley for 2 years, something like that. I've never played it.
Yeah.
It's been on my Steam list for ages. And so that I might wait until that new update comes out to bother to play it.
Right now, everything is like 1.4.2 or whatever. And the next update's going to be just 1.5. And the creator has said that at that point, he may add like another update down the road that will just be like a change of life update, but he doesn't think he thinks at that point he'll be done with it. Like they're already working on like two more games, his development team.
Nice. Because Stardew Valley is or was at least at one point just one person, wasn't it?
It was him. Wow. It took him 8 years to do the first game.
I've seen it played. Johnny Pixel Refs, my co-host on the Spunchunks, he's played it on stream a couple times, and I've kind of lurked and worked because it's one of those things that you can kind of like have on in the background. And I like having chill games, and I'm looking forward to adding some stuff like that to my repertoire, because right now I've got some things that are usually demanding my attention, like modded Minecraft, Satisfactory. No Man's Sky is actually pretty chill. I can chat more with the chat room with No Man's Sky. There's a lot of like flying around, which is easy to just read the chat. With modded Minecraft, I'm so heavy into it, and then with Satisfactory, it's very technical, so I can get really distracted into like problem solving.
Yeah, you have to watch a lot of things and figure out where you're gonna go. There's a lot of thinking.
So, but at the same time, it's also a game where you're not in any kind of like pending danger most of the time. So, like, if you want to just stop and talk with the chat in the middle of whatever you're doing, you can totally do it. You don't have to like worry about stuff. Minecraft's a little bit different. You have to try to like find a safe place to kind of like stop. But with Satisfactory, it's a little bit easier that way. The difference with Satisfactory, I find, is that I just get sucked into what I'm doing, and I've only got 2 to 3 hours to stream on any given day that I do stream, and so Satisfactory stuff takes so long that I'm trying to get stuff done, so I'm usually focused on what I'm doing. But before we move into what we've been watching, we do have another listener email this week, so thank you again for writing in. If you are looking to do that, you can send an email to thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Keep the emails coming. It's awesome to hear from you folks. It's been a fantastic year for email on the show. This email is from Oberon, and it is about the Witcher timeline. Hi, Joel and Megan. This is in response to last week. I just finished listening to episode 372, and I had some comments on your Witcher discussion near the end of the podcast. My wife and I found the plot slash story a bit confusing. I was really thrown off a bit when halfway through the season, I was asking myself, wasn't this person killed last episode? I decided to do some digging. Turns out the story plot slash arc of season one is all about getting Geralt to Ciri. But through flashbacks that build on who, is it Geralt or Geralt? Geralt.
Geralt.
Geralt. On who Geralt is and what a Witcher is. Every scene with Ciri is the present, while any other scenes with Geralt and or Yennefer are flashbacks attempting to cover about 3 to 4 decades of backstory. Well, once I knew this, I could orient myself to a timeline the rest of the season, which was much more enjoyable. Now, I also started reading the books. There are 8 in total. The first 2 are a collection of short stories dealing with various adventures of Geralt and are not structured in any timeline that I can make out. At least 6 of the 8 episodes on Netflix are made from these short stories, further explaining the fragmented feeling of the first season. The last 5 books are the Witcher story proper, and the last book written, read as a third book between the short stories and the last 5, is meant to bridge between the two. So even the books don't seem all that straightforward.
They're confusing as hell.
Yeah, maybe some of these points will help gain a better appreciation on that second watch through. And with 6 more books of original source material, there's still plenty to pull from for future seasons. Loving the Citadel Cafe and the Spun Chunks. Keep up the good work, Oberon. Thanks great for the great email. I'm glad that you're enjoying The Witcher and the podcast, of course. And so I'm not sure if you heard, Lou, but Megan and I were talking about The Witcher, and she watched the featurette on Netflix about the making
of
The
Witcher. Yeah, that just showed up.
Yeah, I have since watched it as well, actually, on Megan's recommendation. And because I follow Henry Cavill on social media, and he's been talking about his return to playing Geralt and, you know, doing some stuff as they're kind of prepping to do season 2 for Netflix. And I do think I will give the season of The Witcher another watch before season 2 comes out, just to try to familiarize myself again with the lore, because I didn't play the games, I didn't read the books. So The Witcher on Netflix was my first experience really learning about the stories outside of just pop culture references and images that I've seen over the course of just, you know, talking about video games for a few years. I agree that around that point in halfway through the season, when someone died in one episode but was alive the next, is when I sort of like, this is really messed up. And I did have to stop, go look up something on a wiki and try to orient myself as well. I think probably we did that at the same episode, Oberon. But the thing that still bugs me about it is that I can deal with that kind of timeline jumping if you're consistent. And the problem that I had was that
it's not consistent.
No, is that so? Okay, Ciri present, Geralt and Yennefer past flashbacks. That's fine. But then all of the present Ciri stuff and all of the past flash. Well, sorry, Ciri stuff I think is actually in order, as far as I know.
It is.
Unless Ciri shows up in any of the flashbacks, which I don't think she does.
No, she doesn't. Not that I remember.
But her and Geralt, cross paths at some point, though.
The thing that screws up the timeline is they tell one of Yennefer's stories and one of Geralt's stories out of order.
Right.
And then they when it comes time to tell it from the other perspective, kind of, or like the other half of the story, it's like you saw the later half first and then Yennefer's second half. The way they did it, it's wonky.
Yeah. So, and that's what I mean. Like I can deal with like flashbacks versus current timeline, but if you're telling the flashback stories out of order, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Like I feel like
they've even gone on the record and said that they did originally, they tried everything filmed in order, but the way that what would have happened was is you would have gotten like all of Geralt's stuff, then you'd have gotten like 3 episodes of Yennefer, and then you'd have gotten 3 episodes of Ciri. Like it would have been like everybody would have gotten like 3 episodes, and then you would have gotten like a finale all at the end. And they thought it would be less jarring to tell them stories out of order. And I was like, I would have rather if you've just gone
Yeah,
back to.
they said in the documentary thing, which is only about 30 minutes, and actually offers very precious little in terms of behind the scenes. They basically just talk about how passionate everyone is and how important the story is in this entire documentary. I don't want to say that they're tooting their own horn because they're not saying we did such a good job. They're saying this is just so important to us and everyone working on it. That's all they said over and over again in the documentary, that you really don't get any information.
I will say this, Netflix lately has not impressed me with their documentary stuff.
No, information light. It's very much, yeah.
I was really excited because Netflix was touting some video game documentary called High Score. It's like six episodes.
Yeah.
Don't waste your time. Everything that they tell you in that doc, those mini documentaries has been told in other mediums way better and in way more detail. It might as well be called, "Hey, video games. You like those, right?" That's what it should be called.
Just a lot of lot of feel good grandeur, you know, like just a lot
Yeah,
of a lot
the first episode literally has like a 10-minute segment where they explain to you youngins what cartridges are.
jeez. Yeah, that's not your target audience. Your target audience is the people that bring nostalgia to the game, which means that we know what a cartridge is. Yeah. So and so and the showrunner for The Witcher even said, like, in the interview, like, you know, I wanted to try and tell this story. Like, can I attempt this, you know, kind of like out of order sort of thing? And while I applaud the attempt, and they did say, like, you know, audiences these days are pretty savvy. We don't want to, you know, pander, blah, blah, blah. But I feel like they just, I applaud your attempt, but unfortunately you've failed. And it just, it's not something. It's something that I find very hard to recommend to people because it's like it's got some great action, some great acting, it's got some cool world building, but my gosh, I don't know if you're going to be able to stick with it because it's really hard to get into. I'm hoping that they've learned the lesson and then they move on in season two.
Season two, if it continues with what I know of the stories, because I've read a couple of the books, everything from that point on should be a continuous story.
Right.
Like this, unless they tell a backstory about Geralt as a boy becoming a witcher or something like that, because they are going to be bringing in a couple of other witcher characters this season.
The thing about that, though, is that if they do Geralt as a boy, then you immediately know it's the past because he's
Right.
not, it's not Henry Cavill. And that's the
Yep.
problem that they had with some of the tales is
Yes.
that when they did these six of these eight short stories with Geralt that are all over the course of 4 decades, he looks the same in every
Yep.
shot. And the documentary reminded me of something that I absolutely hate about the show, which is the Witcher song.
Oh, you mean the song that everybody else loves?
Oh, dude, it rips me out of the show. It sounds like a pop, you know, TikTok stunt. It is. It's not good. It's modern sounding. It doesn't sound like a minstrel sings it. It sounds like a modern song, and it's terrible. They just repeat it over and over again. And so when I think about rewatching The Witcher, I think, oh yeah, right, cool sword fight and Henry Cavill doing stuff. And I really enjoyed, I mean, the acting from, I apologize, I don't remember her name, but the actor that plays Yennefer, fantastic performance about what she did and physically and just emotionally in that series. But then I think, oh God, then I got to deal with this minstrel guy, you know? And it's just like, and if I'm rewatching the show for all the details, I can't skip over stuff. Like I can't just fast forward because there's going to be some little comment in there in all the singing that's going to be important for me to know, right?
It's funny too, because his character in the books is more important than he is in the show.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't mind the actor. I just feel like they've written a character that just does not fit. Does not fit. I think I hope they revisit that, but I doubt they will. Moving on to what we have been watching this past week, I finally have finished Three Below Season 2. And I won't comment
Good
on the
on you,
whole.
sir.
Yeah, I haven't. I won't comment on the whole season. I will just talk about the finale because when I returned to it, I was actually farther along than I thought, which is why I muscled through. I only had three episodes left. It was just a long slog to get there. So the glorious end, which is the finale, and I will, of course, put a hashtag spoiler here in case you haven't watched it. So be careful if you want, if you do want to watch it, I might spoil a few things here. It was two parts, so part two and part three, or part one and part two were episode 12 and 13. And part one actually had some great pacing and action. Like I was back. I was like, oh, okay, this is the Three Below from season one that I really, really enjoyed. And it went from there just downhill. There was like funny moments. I had a couple of laughs. There was some great action. There was some stereotypical cartoon bad guy stuff, but I also don't have the bar set so high that I have those expectations, you know, above. I felt that the bad guy was maybe better in Troll Hunters. Mirando in this is just kind of like stereotypical sci-fi bad guy. So the part two is where they really lost me. The season or series finale for Three Below was really rough. It felt crammed. And I really dislike the emotional baiting of endless goodbyes, not goodbyes, sort of goodbyes. You know, like everybody's sad. And at the last minute, Kleb decides to stay on planet Earth. And you're just like, oh, why couldn't this is just that they could have handled the emotional weight of what this finale wrap up meant, which was trying to get Galen's core from Mirando. Mirando eventually does get Galen's core and becomes a quote unquote god. They just made him bigger. He was the same. It was the same dude, same model, same everything. They gave him some fancy lasers, and he was just bigger. It was a missed opportunity to introduce something really interesting in sci-fi in a world that I really like. Acheridian 5 and the way that the royals look and how all the other characters function, the fact that they're like digital but alive, like it is really cool. And you're telling me that when they find the long lost soul, which is what the core is supposed to be, of one of their creators, like one of their Adam and Eve, for a better, you know, lack of a better term, all it does is make you bigger when you bond with it as an evil villain dictator. Like it was dumb. And unfortunately, in order to defeat Mirando, they designed a laser cannon that can only be powered by the core of two royals. Why would you design it that way? Like it basically just served as a, I can't remember what the term of it is from a story perspective, but it just served as the scapegoat to have to sacrifice either Aja and Kleb. Is it Kleb? I think his name is Kleb. Aja and her brother, or their parents. And what ends up happening is that everybody gets knocked out, and the parents are miraculously alive. They somehow have gained enough. So, like, they skipped over so much and crammed all of these little nice, neat little bows into the last 10 minutes. It was terrible. And there was no emotional payoff. Like, you've spent two seasons trying to protect these royal cores, only to have them sacrifice themselves, and they only get 2 seconds, maybe 15 seconds with their kids before they dissipate into fabric of nothing and kill the bad guy. And what they should have done, in my opinion, and obviously this is subjective, is they should have had the parents wake up somehow 2 episodes before the end of the season. Have them spend some time with the kids. Just long enough for you as the audience to get attached and feel like, oh, this is amazing. These kids finally have their parents back and everything's going to be happy, only to have the kids lose them at the end. That would actually have some emotional payoff. Instead, what they do is write this core-powered cannon into the thing, and then they have Vervatos have to do the right thing, and that is behind the backs of Aja and Kleb to power the cannon with their parents. They walk in on him doing this and they think that he's killing them again or betraying them again. We've done this before. We heard this story before, and they cram it into 5 minutes and it has no emotional weight.
Yeah, I really like the Arcadia series as a whole, but sometimes they're very like they get too wrapped up in the trope, and instead of like changing the trope and making it like its own, they just literally do the trope that you're expecting, and you go, "Oh, come on. Couldn't you have done something more creative?"
Yeah, no, that's how I feel about it too. And it's disappointing because the design, the world building of Arcadia and the Three Below world with Acridian 5 and stuff, and the idea of taking like trolls and wizards and aliens and putting them all into one story is, and having them linked, which is really cool. It's not a well, it's a spoiler for Three Below, but at some point during the season they reveal that the Galen's core was actually protected by Merlin after it crashed on Earth like centuries ago. So like they tie them together in really neat ways. And it's just that the story and execution are felt forced. And then what's worse is that when you look back over the season, you're like, there were three episodes at least in season two that were slow and useless. And you're telling me that you decided to put an entire half an hour episode on Lug's day out, the dog, only for me to be wishing that you had spent more time in the finale. It's just, like it's really poor priority, you know, priorities with storytelling, and it's disappointing because, like I said, I really like it. And the other thing that I find was really a sad note, but also really disappointing was Aja goes back to Acridian 5 to rule as queen, and her brother decides to stay. Krell is his name. I can't believe I was forgetting this. DJ Kleb is his stage name. Krell is his name. So Krell decides to stay, and Aja goes back. I wanted them both to stay because Aja is one of the best female leads I've seen in a cartoon in a long time. Long time. She's strong. She's the physical one. You know, she's the one that's kicking butt, sword fighting, kicking people's butts, asking questions later. She's taller than her boyfriend by at least a head, and is constantly picking him up and rescuing him. Like it's got this really cool, fun, funny, wholesome, like cute message. She's also kick ass. And they've basically just said, no, she's gone back to Acridian 5. She'll show up in cameos. But Krell is probably going to be around more often because he stayed on Earth. And while that's cool and all, I kind of, if you're going to pick one, I'd say Aja should have been the one to stay.
You haven't finished Wizards yet, have you?
I've only just started. I've only just
Okay.
started. That's the next thing on my list.
I will tell you this. He makes an appearance towards the end of Wizards. He's in like one and a half episodes.
Yeah, I
And that's
figured as
it.
much.
And that's it. And his episode and his cameo are really great, but they don't make him outstay his welcome at all.
Well, that's good. That's good. Because I did watch I went right into Wizards because at the end of Three Below, they do a tease for Wizards, you know, like they literally just save the world again, and then this cat shows up and talks to Arg, Toby, and I can't remember the boyfriend's name, but the really annoying dude. So he's there, and they say that, you know, like, come with me if you want to live, the world's about the end. And the joke is that, like, we just saved it, like, again, you know? And so then I thought, well, hey, I've got a couple, you know, a couple more minutes. I'll watch the first episode of Wizards. And Wizards actually felt a lot like the first half of the season finale of Three Below. Turns out, same director. So I was like, not surprised. You know, when I went, it's like, why? Like, this feels very similar. So Wizards has really cool world building. It has this crossover of some of our favorite characters. You're dealing with characters from Trollhunters that you haven't seen in a long time, new characters that are introduced in Wizards, and then you've got obviously no Three Below characters outside of the crossover ones that we've already been familiar with. The more the Arcadia characters than any of the like fantastical characters. So Wizards kicks off with I think it's Casperson is or Casperin is the main dude. And then you've got Claire Nunez coming back, you've got Merlin, you've got Steve Palchuk, that's the boyfriend that I couldn't remember. And Toby of course is there. But they throw you into this like really cool wizard battle with magical creatures, and you've got this guy that works at a restaurant as a waiter that's really centuries old, that's masquerading as a waiter that's a wizard, and so they introduced you to you like running, literally. But
Yeah.
they tie it together really well, and then they do this really cool thing that Tales of Arcadia has been doing so well for quite some time, which is they give this classical, you guys think you know Merlin, you think you know Camelot, you think you know the Knights of the Round Table, but here's the twist. And when Merlin kind of gathers the troll hunters, the heroes of Arcadia, and takes them up on his flying, cool, spaceshipy thing, one of the best one-liners, by the way, I cackled, it was really funny. They come across this flying castle, which is Camelot. So they explain Camelot being hidden but from a modern world in Arcadia by the fact that it's powered by time and it's been flying kind of like in a mist of magical like secrecy for centuries. And all of the wizards and everybody kind of involved are all basically immortal. And it has this really nice like it's familiar but new, and it's
Yeah.
fantasy but sci-fi at the same time, and everything has this really kind of cool twist, and there's lots of action. My gosh, the what are they called? The Arcane Order show up, and they look really cool. It's basically just a mix of all the bad guys that you've come to know from Troll Hunters with the magic people added in. So you've got this, there's goblins and looks like there might be some bad trolls, and then there's what were they? Like the evil wizards. I don't know their names yet, but they looked really cool. Like one person was
Yeah,
like death and shooting ice and stuff.
at one point we even get rehashes of the villains from the original Troll Hunters.
So yeah, like it feels on brand. I'm hoping that the writing and pacing in Wizards is better than Three Below. Don't tell me if it
Much better.
isn't. It much better? Okay,
Much
good.
better. Much better.
That's good.
And
So yeah.
I think there's like one filler episode in the middle, and it explains something that, like, a backstory that you kind of need. But other than that, it's like literally like nonstop 1, 2, 3, 4,
Yeah.
five. Oh, we're at the end.
And I can appreciate a breath where you have to do some backstory. Like that's fine. It's when it's off topic and really tangent, that's when I find it strange. Now this is something that I am curious about. They say that there's the evil Green Knight attacked Blinky and not Toby. What's the main guy's name? Jim. And so Jim has got a shard in his chest, and it's supposedly slowly killing him. Sounds an awful lot like Iron Man, actually. And then Merlin encases him in like a green crystal to keep him from dying. And I don't remember this happening at all. I think it's just a flashback that they kind of like explain to you in the first episode, just to kind of like remove Jim from the equation for some reason.
Jim is as much a part in Wizards as he is in Troll Hunters.
Okay, good.
It just takes it's like the first two or three episodes he's kind of like not really involved, and
Yeah.
then all of a sudden he becomes a major player.
Interesting. I don't know. It's an odd choice, but the thing that I was confused about was like they said that when I looked it up on the wiki, they said that the events happened during Three Below, but I don't remember that. And I'm wondering if it was just there was this one little moment where the members of Three Below called Blinky, and Blinky and Jim were battling somebody, and it was like a 2 second phone call. It was really quick. And I'm wondering if that's what they're referring to, if that
I
was the
think it
battle.
is. That was the battle.
Oh, interesting. Like, so they do some subtle, see, this, I mean, they can do some subtle tie-ins, and they can do this really well, and then they can also drop the ball, but hard. So I don't know. I'm back in. Like, I mean, Wizards looks cool. It looks like the pace is picking up. Like I mentioned, this Francisco Ruiz Velasco is one of the directors on the intro called Spellbound. He shows up again in episode 4, and that's it. So the one thing I've noticed about Three Below and Wizards is that there doesn't seem to be a lot of consistency throughout the direction. Whereas on Troll Hunters, when I was looking at it, if you liked the season kickoff, like the 1, 2, 3, and you really liked the 11, 12, 13, they were usually all written and directed by the same people. And then in between you had these like rocks and stones being tossed around.
I will say this, as someone who has watched all of Wizards, Wizards feels more like Trollhunters than it does Three Below. Nice. The whole season.
Yeah.
So if there were things that drove you crazy in Three Below, there's way less of that in Wizards.
Nice. Very, very cool. I know that time travel is obviously a thing. That's not a spoiler. That happens in the first 20 minutes. And they allude to it like a lot of, you know, the whole thing just talks about time from the minute that you start watching the episode. So I'm kind of curious because having recently just watched Endgame, I wonder how they're going to handle time travel.
They're pretty good about it. It was the thing that worried me the most about this story is I was like, why are we getting into time travel now?
Yeah.
And why can't we just have wizards? Why do we have to have time travel? But they handle the time travel really, really, really well. And there's some twists and turns that happen because of the time travel that fill in blanks in the other series. Nice. And I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Okay.
And they've done that before within the series. I think it was season 2 of Trollhunters. It might have been 3. But there's this awesome moment when the Creep Slayers are formed. And they're having some crazy adventure. And in the episode just before the crazy adventure that you get to see, all the Trollhunters are doing the thing. And then like Palchuk and Domzowski and like all these people, they go by in a car and it just looks like random chaos. Like, and everybody's like, what the hell? And all you get is the drive-by. That's it. You get no explanation, nothing. And then the next episode, they take you back to the night before and they give you the episode where you get to see all that take place. And yeah. I thought it was great. It was really good writing. It was really clever.
There's lots of that. They fill in some plot holes from Trollhunters that didn't get answered, get answered. They change some backstory so that they make more sense. And you go, oh, okay, cool. All right. I enjoyed Wizards way more than I did any of the Three Below I watched, and I didn't even finish it. So
nice. Okay, cool. Well, I'm looking forward to having something that I can actually watch and just like not have to go into the Netflix realm of choice paralysis, which I've been suffering from lately. So I'm looking forward to that. But that's it for me, really. Like, I haven't had a lot of time to do anything else. What have you been up to the last little bit?
Well, I signed up for HBO Max a while ago. And I'm getting ready to cancel it because we're running. I'm not paying for this thing every month. I'm getting ready. So we've been kind of trying to watch what's on there that we want to watch so I can cancel it. And Erica came across The Alienist. It's a period piece about like hunting serial killers, but it takes place in the 1800s before psychiatrists were called psychiatrists. They were called Alienists, and it stars Daniel, I'm going to butcher his name, it's Daniel Brühl. He was the villain in Civil War.
Oh, yes.
And he plays a psychiatrist, or an alienist, who's interested in the mind of killers and why they kill, and he thinks that if he can analyze and talk to them, he might be able to help the police find killers before they strike again, kind of thing. And the police don't want him involved. So he gets his buddy, who's an illustrator for the New York Times, to go to murder scenes and see what the killer did and then bring him back images that he's drawn because there's no photos. The illustrator has to go there and draw the murder scene. So he's been trying to get Luke Evans, who plays the illustrator, to go there and draw the crime scenes, and then they go over them together and try and figure out what lurks in the minds of dark killers in the 1800s. And then Dakota Fanning is in it, and she's supposed to be like the first female police officer of New York City that nobody wants. And it's very cool. I won't lie, though. It took me about 2 episodes. This was Erica's watch. Erica loves period pieces. And so she was like, I want to watch this. I was like, that's fine. I'm going to put my headphones on and play a video game here on my computer while you do that. And then by the end of the 3rd episode, I was like, wait, who's the bad guy? What's going on here? And she was like, oh, are we sucked in now? And I was like, damn it, yes. Yes. Because I'm not a period piece fan. when she watches what's that show with the time traveling lady,
Oh,
the
Outlander?
I can't watch Outlander.
No, it got repetitive. The first season was interesting, I will say.
I hate that show. I watched the first season with her and I was like, I kind of like this. And then by the end of the second season, I was like, I'm never watching this show again. You can watch it on your own. I'm gonna go do something else.
They lost me too in the second season. I couldn't get into it.
This is it doesn't outstay its welcome. It's like 8 episodes a season. And it was done by TNT. You never know what's going on. Like at one point they go down a rabbit hole making you think that some character is a bad guy, to the point where literally like the whole episode starts focusing on this character, and you're like, is he the bad guy? Is he the bad guy? And then they go, oh no, mislead. Here we go. We're going down this road. And you're like, whoa, why did they waste like 2 episodes making me think this guy was a bad guy and he's not at all? Okay. And then that leads to another plot twist. It leads to another plot twist. And I was like, wow, this show is really good. And apparently it's based on a series of books that are very, very popular. And TNT has picked it up for like 3 more seasons. So I'm guessing it's done very, very well. If you're look if serial killers in the 1800s is kind of a thing and it's your shtick, this show is gonna definitely tickle your fancy, that's for sure.
Nice. Yeah, I don't mind period pieces. I tend to look for escapism in my entertainment, so period pieces are a nice way to like not have to deal with all the modern things that we're all dealing with on a daily basis, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's why The Boys really lost me. Same with
Yeah.
and I have to say that some of the series that I've stopped watching on Amazon Prime Video, it's mostly because of the performance of the Prime Video app on my Apple TV. I can't watch something cool in sci-fi when it goes pixelated like every 10 minutes. It's like, no, I need the visuals here. Like I need this to be immersive. And if you're constantly reminding me that I'm streaming this in my living room, then I'm not in the show.
Don't use the HBO Max app then.
No, yeah,
Holy
no,
crap. I can't, it's not even on Roku. HBO and Roku are still fighting over the pricing of putting it on Roku. So I have to watch this on my PlayStation. And watching it on my PlayStation, it's literally like every like 20 minutes it stops and is like loading, buffering. And I'm like, did we not fix this? Like, this is something that should not be a problem anymore. And I don't, and at this point, I blame it's got to be on HBO's end. It's not on PlayStation's end. It's got to be HBO's. Something on their back end is just messed up.
Yeah, I don't have that problem with Netflix on the Apple TV. I think I had that problem with Crave. I'm just trying to remember. I think with Crave, which is how I have to watch HBO content in Canada, I think that I had to use the mobile app on my iPad and then AirPlay that to get that on the big screen. Because that's how I watched Picard. And actually, I remember several episodes I was having performance issues and I had to just watch it on the iPad rather than on the big screen because it was just a lot, like for whatever reason, it was just causing problems. And that's how what I'm doing. I'm waiting until the next season of Picard drops because HBO for me, I believe, is $20 a month to get it. And so I'm going to build up a list of things to check out. And then while I've got that month when Picard is coming out weekly, I'll probably watch some other stuff on HBO.
I have something to recommend to you that is in an animated vein and I think you'll enjoy. And the other thing on HBO Max that we watched the whole run of is we watched 2 seasons of Harley Quinn on HBO Max.
So is that also on the DC Universe thing or is it only on HBO?
It was on the DC Universe thing, but DC Universe is no longer. They announced this week that they were shutting that whole thing down.
Oh, wow. So I wonder where all of their stuff is going to go. Because I've been trying to find a place to stream Wonder Woman and I haven't been able to find it.
A bunch of stuff is going to HBO Max, and then a bunch of stuff is going to the CW, and then a bunch of stuff is going someplace else. And they're trying to wrangle it all under the same umbrella, but I don't know. AT&T bought HBO, and ever since, and Warner Brothers, and ever since then, it's been a mess. I don't think AT&T has a clue what it's doing. Hence why I think this Harley Quinn show is so good. I think that this was made and nobody was paying attention to what was being made because it is a parody of Batman. The whole episode, everything. Commissioner Gordon is a drunk who doesn't understand why Batman is a hero and catches everybody, and he just wants Batman to be his best friend. The Joker is basically the Joker from everything you've ever seen him in, and he treats Harley like dirt, and he lets her get caught for him so he can get away, and then he leaves her in Arkham for a year, and that's when she decides, no, I'm done with him. So her and Poison Ivy escape Arkham, and they move into an apartment together, and that's where this show takes place. Is Harley Quinn now wants to become the best bad guy in Gotham, but she doesn't want to like kill people, and she doesn't want to like do stuff. She'll kill henchmen, but like I don't want to rob banks. I just want to like maim and have fun, and that's kind of like the shtick. And her goal is she wants to join the Legion of Doom. And at every turn, the Joker is like trying to sabotage her joining the Legion of Doom. And Poison Ivy keeps going, why do you want to join that boys club? Why don't we just go do our own thing? And Harley Quinn's like, no, I need validation. So I need to join the Legion of Doom. And every time she shows up, it's like a series of villains. And the best villain that keeps showing up is Bane, because they do the Batman Dark Knight Rises Bane voice, where I will get you, Batman.
Yeah.
And every time they do things, it's like, why did Bane blow up the coffee shop? Because the boy there was making fun of my voice. and Bane is like a 10-year-old with bombs. And they're like, Bane, why did you smash the thing? Well, the announcer on the TV show was making fun of me, so I went there and I blew up the stadium. And they're like, oh, Bane. And like, it's like a running joke of like Bane being like, and then I will blow up the building. And you're like, come on, man, stop it. And every time he shows up on camera, I can't help but laugh. And the whole series is like that. Like one of the reoccurring characters is Kite Man. He's a Batman villain who flies around on a kite. And at one point they use him like a taxi service to like get around. They're like, hey, Kite Man, can you get us across town? Because we can't really take a cab. Sure, no problem. And then he gives them like a lift across town. This show is so stupid that you can't help but laugh at it every time you turn around.
Brock had was mentioning, I think, a couple of weeks ago that he really enjoyed it. And also that it's like not for kids. It's like a very much...
Not at all. You think it is at first, like the first 10 minutes, there's like no swear words. And then all of a sudden it turns into gore and swearing. And you go, oh, okay. Almost every voice actor you hear, you'll be like, oh, I know that voice. Why do I know that voice? Oh, that's a guy from a sitcom. Oh, I know. That's a stand-up comic. Oh, what? Like every time you turn around, everybody is voiced by somebody famous.
I was actually really surprised when Brock had told me that Harley Quinn was Kaley Cuoco from, not Third Rock. What's it called? The Nerd Show.
Big Bang Theory.
Big Bang Theory. Thank you. Yeah. Like, so that was interesting, especially because like that's a... Like there's no swearing in the Big Bang Theory. So it's always interesting when you take like actors that are famous for like traditional television roles where there's just no swearing and stuff. And then to see them in stuff where there is a very adult content, it's always really weird, you know, because it's almost like off brand, you know?
One of the best running gags in the show though, is she keeps showing up at things and not as the villain, but to like save the day so that people don't get hurt. Cause she did something stupid, and that's why this bad thing is about to happen. So she's like trying to make up for the fact she did something stupid. And every time superheroes keep showing up and arresting her, and she's like, no, I didn't do it. And they're like, yeah, Harley, we've heard that before. And she's like, no, really? Like, to the point where they have to use Wonder Woman's lasso of truth. And they're like, oh, wow, you really didn't do this, did you? And she's like, no, what have I been trying to tell you?
I find Harley Quinn a really interesting character. I need to watch Birds of Prey. I haven't gotten around to that yet. Mainly, again, because I just haven't
found a very good.
I just haven't found a place to stream it. Like, it's hard to find. You know, like, I think... I'm not
HBO
sure where...
HBO Max.
Yeah, I wonder... See, that might... And that may be something that I should do, rather than building up, like, too many television shows to try to catch up on, is also try to build up some films that I've missed that I can't stream, and see if I can't watch, because that's going to be easier to watch on during the HBO month that I have it, or however long it goes for Picard, because I'm interested for that. That brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by you. If you're wondering, hey, I don't hear any advertisements on the Citadel Cafe, that's because we're listener supported. We don't need them. It's because of you kind folks that we can keep on doing what we're doing. If you're getting value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. You can become a member at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Joining at any level will get you an invite to the member-only Discord server. And currently, during the pandemic, I have the bonus episodes and any other audio bonuses that we have available to all tiers. So it doesn't matter what tier you join, you'll get the bonus audio as well. Current Patreon count is at 21. We have 21 patrons. That's up one from last month. We had dropped to 20 in August, and we have a new patron. So we're back up to our, summer high of 21. I believe, I could be wrong, but I think 22 is the most patrons we've ever had. So if you want to be the person that ties us for the top number of patrons here at the Citadel Cafe, head on over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, become a member, join the Discord, have some fun talking about nerdy stuff, and know that you are helping me and the other members of the Citadel Cafe put a new podcast out for you every week. My pick this week is Visual, which is always fun for a podcast, but trust me, it will be worth it. The Mandalorian Season 2 is coming to Disney Plus on October 30th, 2020. I was looking to remind myself what date that was. I couldn't remember whether it was the 31st, whether it was the 30th, whatever. Anyway, in my Google search, I came across this image called The Mariolorian by artist Mauricio Abril, on artstation.com. I'll have a link and we'll have the image actually in our show notes. It is just fan art of the Mandalorian reimagined as if there was a Nintendo crossover where Mario plays the Mandalorian, Yoshi plays the child, and I don't know the name of these little characters. That
Shy
are,
Guys.
Shy Guys. So the Shy Guys, I should know that. The Shy Guys are replacing the Jawas in this piece of art. And it is on brand. Like, it just, you can totally imagine a like little CG cartoon of Mario going around with a little Yoshi in the bassinet, the floating bassinet that looks like a green Yoshi egg.
Very fitting, as of this week, Nintendo announced the 35th anniversary of Mario. So
nice. Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And not the first time. As soon as I found this, I looked for Mariolorian, and there's a lot of fan art that has done this crossover. So it's not a new thing, but it worked really, really well. And so if you want to check that out, we'll have the link in our show notes. Well, that wraps up another episode of The Citadel Cafe. You can get more information about the show and links to some of the things that Lou and I talked about at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show was, of course, composed by Kevin MacLeod, and you can email us, just like Oberon, at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. You can subscribe for free on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify. We also post the show on YouTube, if that's where you'd like to hang your podcast hat. But word of mouth is the easiest way to support the show. Just tell friends about The Citadel Cafe and where they can listen to it. You'd be surprised how far that goes. Leaving a rating or a review on the Apple Podcast app or your podcast platform of choice is another way to share the show. It just helps rank us higher, get us in the eyeballs of people that are just searching randomly on places like iTunes and stuff for things to listen to. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online, including my illustration and design portfolio, at joelduggan.com. If you're interested in hiring me, then you just drop me a line through the website. You can also listen to my exploits about Minecraft over at thespawnchunks.com, where we will be talking about the new DLC, Creeping Winter, next week on the show. We also have some more modded Minecraft talk happening there. You can follow me at Joel Duggan on social media, and of course twitch.tv/Joel Duggan for all of the latest video game content that I'm putting out there. It is September on Twitch, so I'm streaming a little bit more often than normal. Hope to see you there. Lou, where can people find you online?
Easiest place to find me is on all social media under the name Busy Zombie Lord, where you can catch my podcast, Zombies Ate My Podcast, where the upcoming episode, we're going to talk about how AMC just announced that The Walking Dead might be coming to an end. Actually, news hit while we were doing this, that season 11 may be the end of The Walking Dead. So that's going to be our big topic this week.
Wow. 11 seasons. That's insane.
11 seasons. And they said, oh yeah, it's coming to an end. And by the way, doesn't mean the end of Walking Dead. It just means end of the Walking Dead, the show. We're going to do like 7 more spinoffs.
Yeah, I'm about to say they're not going to leave that cash cow just out in the field by itself.
No.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick 2.